Well, I'll tell you, John Hoke fascinates me. The way he thinks, the way he predicts, his interpretation of events as well. We'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest tonight, John Hoke. John, ABC News, they're doing a feature on the program for Nightline. They just left, and they recorded a little bit of our discussion as well. So I'll let you know when that air date is.
Yes, it'd be very interesting to see what they have to say about all this.
Yeah. It was kind of interesting because the reporter, Brian Rooney, who's the son of Andy Rooney, came in and fascinating guy and asked the right questions and, you know, was really genuinely curious, I think, about Coast to Coast and the kinds of audience members that listen to the program. And I think he went away with a better and an interesting understanding of the program and some of the issues.
Well, you know, this is a little, as an astrological take on this, this is a little inkling of the Aquarian age, things that were not part of the status quo. Coast to Coast certainly has been forward in this. Now the mainstream in this kind of a new era, looking for solutions, is going to look out of the box, outside of the dogma, for solutions. And as I was saying in the previous hour, this cycle happened before for Americans over 200 years ago, when the same aspects of Pluto transiting through Capricorn, which astrologers and who predict using astrology to predict future of nations and political movements, said is the kind of energy that created a desire to find new structures of politics and social ideas and apply them. The Enlightenment that was happening in the 1700s, Rousseau, Voltaire, and then Jefferson and Paine, and all of these people were trying to construct a new architecture for our political discourse, the way we govern ourselves. And we are entering right now that similar climate in history is returned. And sooner or later, the bickering and the posturing, the very nature of the fact that we've been under this duopoly between two parties, the American people, I've called them prediction almanacs ago, I talked about them being the invisible majority. You know, Nixon talked about the silent majority. We now have an invisible majority of Americans who don't think in terms of one-upmanship with the one party or the other, who are actually desperately reaching out for some kind of leadership that goes beyond those two parties. And I think in the midterm elections, you'll see it, and especially in the next presidential elections, one of the reasons Barack Obama may be winning a second term is not because he receives a landslide, but because he is the largest minority vote that got the most electoral college votes in a three-way third-party rebellion.
Good point.
And I've been saying this party, I call it the Party of Americans, has been something brewing. And in these revolutionary times, what I'm sincerely hoping is that in 2012, it's not going to be much, it's going to be a dud for doomsdayers who want to pin on the poor Mayan calendar a lot of stuff that doesn't exist.
You are joining us December 21st, 2012, I trust.
And I have Nostradamus's hat with me.
And perfect.
Before the world ends in a Roland Emmerich way, I'll eat that hat on radio.
By the way, I think I'm going to see you at the Conscious Life.
Will you
I not?
Are.
Super.
I'm on your panel.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, it's always fun working with you, John.
Yes, I enjoyed. We met at last year in
yep.
the flesh. Otherwise, it's been Discarnate Voices since St. Louis.
You know what's different? And I've always been a believer that when you finally meet someone, at least for me as a host, you know, I think I begin to understand you better. I think it makes me a better host after you've met someone. You know, doing it simply over the phone or wherever is fine and dandy. But once you meet someone and you see how they think and how they react, you know, it changes your perception a lot.
And that's true. And what's soon to come in our technology is the kind of real-time access where you will not only be doing radio, but you will be doing picture radio. You know, you will be seeing the person. It won't be jerky, max headroom, twitching people, but real-time flow. And I think that's one of the wonderful things that the Aquarian Age is giving us in this 500-year cycle of communication. You know, every 500 years, communication goes through a breakthrough in human evolution. The last time, it was the Gutenberg Bible and the Gutenberg printing press.
Yeah.
And today, on the very day that you and I are talking about this important year, year three of the Aquarian Age, Steve Jobs presents the new printing press.
Which can be and will be dramatic.
Yes, and will also, one of the nice turnarounds, one of the nice positive wild cards is that the written word and the spoken word are not going out with the last age. They're just going to have a new delivery system.
That's so true.
And then it's begun. The things that you saw in Minority Report, Steven Spielberg's movie, I mean, he researched very carefully a lot of what our modern-day prophets, our science fiction authors, had been foreseeing. I mean, if you look at the details, people had these little, like, thin laminated pieces of the bendable plastic that actually they could put some little thing into and read anything or see the pictures moving like a Harry Potter newspaper. And that's not way in the future. That's the end of this decade or sooner. You're going to see stuff like that.
Let's spend a little time talking about Nostradamus. Of course, as you have interpreted, wasn't there a lost book of Nostradamus, and what was that?
Well, you know, I've been on a number of documentaries in the last 2 years on History Channel, Nostradamus 2012, which looked a lot at the lost book, and the next Nostradamus. And I had the pleasure of being invited to be on this new 12-part series, Nostradamus Effect, which I'm on four of the episodes, about 12 episodes. I'm grateful to History Channel at last allowing me to say, without being censored in the editing floor,
right,
what I think about the lost book of Nostradamus, granted from 30 years of studying Nostradamus and many purported books attributed to him. There is no connection that I can see between Nostradamus himself and his hand being the hand that wrote that book. For one reason, the hand that wrote that would have written that book in the 1560s was so arthritic that he needed his secretary to write almost everything he wrote, and he just scratched out his signature. His son, who may actually be the person who composed the book, was a picture portrait drawer, a sketcher, a man who made a living doing portraits. Some of the quality of the pictures look like they might have been done by him, but I've got to stress that the book that is the basis of this conundrum is a book that the ink proved, and this is what Nostradamus 2012 did a really good job of showing, that this famous book that's supposed to be the lost book of Nostradamus, was the ink was as old as maybe 1700. Now, Nostradamus died in 1566. His son died in 1630, around that time. So this is a copy of the artist's work and the print, because it's handwritten. So it's possible that his son wrote it, but the weird thing about that is that Nostradamus made it quite loud and clear that the gift of prophecy would die with him, that none of his descendants would have this power. It's also kind of a weird thing that goes on with the sons of and grandsons of Nostradamus, that his work was suddenly, parts that were missing suddenly appeared, not in four lines, but in six lines, called the Sixians. They were handed to King Henry IV at the turn of the century into the 17th century. And isn't it interesting that almost all of those 42-some-odd Sixtians almost all talk about the glories to come from Henry IV's reign? It was a fraud, and it could have been a fraud perpetrated by a nephew of Nostradamus's named Sev. Although, you know, it's a spotty record of that. It could be that Caesar Nostradamus had this complicated relationship, love-hate relationship with his father. It's thanks to him and a few other people that we even talk about Nostradamus. But at the same time, it seems like he wanted to share a little of the sunlight and show his hand in prophecy. It's very likely that's true. But the final thing I've got to say, which has got to be stressed again with all these documentaries, including the Nostradamus effect, and I wish my colleagues in this field would just kind of hose themselves down a little bit and calm down.
Back off, right?
And just simply say, I mean, there are some of these documentaries where they're telling you what to see in what is such, and this is such a vague, open to interpretation drawings that, there's some people in my field who have looked at that, thought they saw Leo in a certain transit that means Nostradamus is pointing to 2012. Well, I tell you all on this show, categorically, from my experience of 30 years of studying this, being intimately involved with the twists and turns of Nostradamus's unique form of French, there is absolutely no connection between 2012 and Nostradamus's prophecies. 2009, yes. 2013, yes. A half a dozen important things in the 2020s, certainly. But 2012 does not come up in Nostradamus, according to my studies. And I challenge the other people on these shows, beyond what they want to do playing what's in the cloud today, folks. You know, I see a giraffe. No, I see a bumblebee, you know, I see a rabbit. That these pictures in the Lost Book are so cloudy that you see whatever you want to see in them. And one thing that I've learned with Nostradamus in these all these years is that his language can work like flypaper and to stick the buzzing fly of your expectations upon. And it works both ways. If you don't like Nostradamus, you will find anything you need to find to debunk him at the complete ignorance of all the things that counters that. And if you're a blind believer in Nostradamus, there is just nothing that Nostradamus can do that's wrong, according to what you project upon him.
Let's talk a little bit, John, about the Antichrist. Some say that it's our current president. You have said no way. I remember that in a past show. But talk about Mopis for a moment.
There are three antichrists in Nostradamus' prophecies. It's unique in the annals of prophecy. I have not encountered any other tradition that has more than one, in East, West, Native, whatever tradition. But Nostradamus has three. The first was Paul Ne Laurent, which is an anagram, which if you're going to decode these anagrams, you have to do it in French or Latin, is Napoleon Noir, Napoleon King. And spelled in the old Corsican Napoleone. It's the way Napoleon described his name before he made it Napoleon, to be more French, because he was born in Corsica. The next one is a man named after a river, the ancient name for the river Danube, which is Hister.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spelled with a Gothic S, which looks like a T, a very elongated T. That has since been believed to be Adolf Hitler. Now, the third Antichrist is called Mabus, M-A-B-U-S. Now, Mabus I have a book that's also at hogueprophecy.com, an e-book called Nostradamus and the Antichrist, codenamed Mabus. And it is the conclusion of a 25-year detective trail I've been on, trying to see which modern leaders in the Middle East and the West might most likely fit the very clear steps that are left by Nostradamus on who the third Antichrist might be. The one step that he leaves totally obscure is he covers his name in this name that can actually decode itself into many Arab terrorist names and a few United States presidents.
Interesting.
One of them being Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the four key candidates that I came to portray in this book were Saddam Hussein, which you can get by taking MABUS and reversing it. And if you can reverse any letters like a B or D to a B or B to a D, then you can reverse it again. And what you get is Subam, which becomes Sudan, Saddam. That is a classic way that you can reverse negative. That's a law and anagram work. You get Saddam Hussein. You also can take Obama, and if you pronounce it correctly, it's Obama. Just like America, it's America, it's Obama. Well, you have MAABOOs, usually R-O-Us.
Got the letters.
There it is. One redundant letter is replaced, and you get the missing S, Mabus. Now, but you can also take Osama bin Laden. The correct pronunciation phonetically is USAMA. That gives you, again, MAAUS. So you have the double A, drop the redundant A, and replace the one missing B. You get Mabus. Now, Mabus is connected to the Middle East because of a prophecy. Quatrain 30, Century 2, Volume 2 of the Prophecies, talks about that the Antichrist would be from the infernal gods of Hannibal. Now, one of the key ways to unlock Nostradamus is to put your projections aside and learn what was the metaphors of the 16th century, classical and biblical and whatnot, of the Mediterranean world, and to understand the classical backgrounds of words, because they were really into that in the Mediterranean period of the Renaissance. If you know your classical literature, you know that the infernal god of Hannibal was Baal Hamon. He's a Phoenician god, worshipped what would be the modern Middle East and North Africa. So the region that we're looking at in modern times is the Middle East. Now, Baal Hamon, you got to study your Roman history, classical history, to understand these words, because Baal Hamon was not the name that the god continued to have after Carthage, Hannibal's city, was conquered by the Romans in the Third Punic War. It was changed to the term Romanized, Thurbo Majus, M-A-J-U-S.
Here we are again.
That is the link. And you follow that link, you look at, he's a terror to all mankind, a terror not seen ever in the journals before. And he's kind of a modern use of journal in the way he uses it, like he's trying to describe modern newspapers or modern journalism. And it links to all these different King of Terror prophecies from 1999 and everything. It might actually be a prophecy about the 9/11 disaster.
We'll be back with more with John Hogue in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we've got John Hogue tonight. And next hour, we'll take your phone calls with John Hogue. More to talk with him about his predictions for 2010 and also Nostradamus in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John, back to the Antichrist, if we can, just for a little bit longer. Do you think that person is here now on the planet, alive and well?
Well, no. I think the person is dead, and that is an important thing to notice. When, if I read for you Quatrain 62 of Century 2, which is the famous Mabus prophecy, says, Mabus very soon then will die. Then will come a horrible undoing of people and animals. At once one will see vengeance, 100 powers or countries, thirst, famine, when the comet will pass. Now, I say that the Third Antichrist may be already dead, because it's in the Antichrist number 3 prophecies, there is a unique shift from the other two. He dies at the beginning, not at the end of his conflicts. His death actually triggers the undoing of people and animals around the world. Or it means that when he dies, this is at a time when the human race and the natural order of the planet is going through unraveling. I mean, de fait, the way he uses it in Old French, means very similar things to what I was saying in the first hour, that David Goodman Crowley and Orson Pratt and other seers were seeing about the world at large, the balkanization of the world, and our country directly, and dated around the time window of just 10 years from now. So, you know, I look at this prophecy, and I then look at who is of the key figures is dead, and I see Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Now, you and I and most of the people listening tonight are probably thinking, Saddam Hussein, he's no Adolf Hitler. He's no Napoleon. He was an idiot, you know, and that I would concur with you. A small-time little two-bit dictator who got himself a little 15 minutes of world
of fame, yeah.
However, here's the key response to that. It doesn't matter what you, I, or the rest of you think Mabus should be. What matters is who Nostradamus thought Mabus should be. And the thing that's intriguing about this candidate, of the four chief candidates, which would be Saddam Hussein, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Osama bin Laden, who, of course, could still die, and maybe soon this year, in a showdown between Obama versus Osama, which I think confused the heck out of Nostradamus because a lot of the people's names converge. And I said in the book, Nostradamus and the Antichrist, I contend that Nostradamus was confused.
One letter.
Yeah. And Hussein. You got a middle name for a president, and it was the last name of one of the other candidates who's dead.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein.
All bizarre, John.
But what's really intriguing about Saddam Hussein, why he's not such a long shot, is these amazing and chilling things that happen in this prophecy, which only he has fulfilled. The second prophecy will tell you, this is linked to the first, the third Antichrist, Mabus, very soon annihilated, just like Mabus very soon will die. This is different wording, but it's the way Nostradamus uses word links to get you part two of a prophecy. It says, 27 years his bloody war will last. The heretics are dead, captives exiled, blood-soaked human bodies, and a redded icy rain or hail covering the earth. Now, what's great about this term earth is that it's not, if he had said it in the terms of French, tout le monde, it would have meant the whole world. But he only is tout la terre, which means it could just be the earth that he sees in his vision, just a patch of earth where he sees a horrific vision, which sounds very much like bodies at Halabja during a chemical weapons attack, which happened during Saddam Hussein's time. The other thing that's important to note, that the moment that Saddam Hussein became dictator of Iraq to the moment that he was hung, with all the wars inside with the Kurds and the Sunnis and the Shias, and all the wars he fought outside of the country with Iran, America, the coalition, Kuwait, is exactly 27 years.
That is interesting.
27 years his bloody war will last. And then it says, when the comet, 100 powers, thirst, famine, when the comet will pass. The night, the early wee hours of before dawn, where Saddam Hussein was hung, is the same day that the biggest comet, brightest comet in 60 years, began to first be recognizable by the human eye. That is Comet McNaught, which 2 weeks after Saddam Hussein's death became not a little smudge, but one of the most beautiful comets and significant cometary events in 60 years.
Oh, it just hung up there in the sky, didn't it?
And it happened to come to visual sight, which is the way Nostradamus would look at it, because he didn't have telescopes. He would be looking at things you could see with the naked eye. So please, everybody, don't write me another thing about a comet that you can see in a 400-power telescope. If it's like Hale-Bopp, it's like Comet McNaught, then it's significant for us to look at prophetically. Or if it's something that looks like a comet that's falling out of the sky, like the Columbia disaster, which happened a few weeks before the invasion of Iraq, It could also mean that Nostradamus loves double entendre. That means he hid things, didn't he? Well, yeah, and he hid them in these quatrains, which on average only give you about 29 to 30 words to talk about very profound things. And so you have to be a real condenser of your double meanings. And a comet falling out of the sky, one prophecy that's related to this, dragging a trail of sparks, well, that could be the Columbia sadly breaking up in the morning sky over the state of the president, the home state of the president. Most of the debris, ironically, falling near Palestine, Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, probably just a very wicked coincidence, but still, a few weeks later, we had the invasion of Iraq. And Nostradamus, being a 16th century man, put a lot of credence into heavenly portents. And the fact that Saddam Hussein died when the comet appeared, the greatest comet in 60 years, and the fact that his bloody rule is 27 years, in my mind, even though I tried for the last 25 years to look at other candidates, I keep going back to this. Since 1986, I've been saying that he's been modest. And I've been trying to move to other potentials, but I still now hold, after all these years, that he is still the best choice.
You keep coming back to him too, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't want to. I would like to go elsewhere, because I also, like many of you, think him, little dictator, not Hitler or Napoleon. Now we still have, to be scholarly fair, to be as a scholar beyond my opinions, I can't rule out something that sounds really bad for a lot of people from my own native country, and that is that also the current president, also his name spells out Mabus. Now, I know there's a whole lot of people trying to create a cult of Obama as the Antichrist. I do not think he is, and if Nostradamus saw him, he's probably talking about the Black King prophecies that do relate to the Middle East, and to make a long story short, seem to indicate some showdown between a black king and the Antichrist. The other thing, too, is that because he may be confused, Mabus may not actually be one person, but a compilation of several people that he saw looking into the future's magic mirror darkly at the things he describes, very shadowy views of the future. He's a human being. He'll get confused, and I think it's possible that Mabus is a collision of two destined leaders destined to fight each other, one evil, one good. Now the question is, which one is it? And since Osama bin Laden is still alive, we cannot rule out, maybe he'll die and there's something very commentary about it. There is the machine of flying fire prophecy that seems to describe some robotic thing that kills him from the sky, which means I would predict that his death will be that like by Tula Masood and many of his other lieutenants, that he will be killed by a drone. And that may happen this year. Then we'll have to see if this triggers the conflict. I don't think it will, frankly. One of the wild cards in my book, Predictions for 2010, is that the Middle East is actually going to surprisingly lighten up.
It's going to calm down?
For 5 years.
Lighten up could be a nuke.
Yeah, that's the problem with English. It's It has so many meanings to the same word. Drives other people crazy who don't speak English. But it's we have a situation where, and I write in detail in the book about it, that there's going to be progress in Palestine, not from the government, but the people just getting tired of waiting for their governments to do things. People are going to start just building the Palestinian state as if their government, they could drag them along and do it. That's going to start happening. Private citizens are getting much more involved in our future than I've ever seen before. And I forecasted that a year ago in the last almanac, that it's citizen power, which is a very Aquarian age thing, just like citizen internet. This is so much the Aquarian age, where interaction of mass movements to help, paradoxically, individual freedom. That is at direct odds with the other side of Aquarius, which wants to control it all. So that's one of the reasons why we have this, in the early stages of this period of new history, this tug of war. And the between status quo wants to keep the, it wants to live by what it knows in the past, and the Aquarian age, which is telling us, you've got to drop the past and recreate yourself anew. And that's quite a struggle in all of our lives. And in this struggle, there are even native prophecies of the Hopi and others that basically say is a choice between choose the unknown and celebrate it and be challenged by the unknown future, or the Hopi say people will drop dead from their own fear of change.
True, true. Now, regardless, we are moving, John, into a period of incredible times, aren't we?
Yes, yes, we are. And it's not going to end anytime soon. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. So rather than be afraid of it, enjoy it. You know, change the gestalt. One of the most revolutionary things that we could do, and this comes up again and again in prophecies about the new man, which are prophecies that I try to collect because they go against. You know, there are a lot of prophets that are respected because what they say fits with what the status quo wants to see about the future. But there are also a cadre of prophets throughout history that don't predict the same interpretations that kind of undermine the status quo. And I've been a champion of these prophecies and prophets for 30 years in my books, and I try to bring them to the forefront. You know, people like Gurdjieff, people like Osho, who are collectively looking at a possible humanity coming that, for instance, one of the prophecies is that the new individual not have the false idea that all human beings are equal. They are not. They are unique, which is a far superior concept than equality. So, like, these prophets are saying that even our concept of all people are created equal are going to be soon considered arcane. People will rise to, you know, we're even looking at something that, well, look at it this way. And people in Nostradamus' time thought there'd never be an end to royalty and kings.
True.
And yet Nostradamus,
I didn't even think about that.
And he was terrified by it. He thought the common advent of the vulgar people taking over the world was a terrible idea. We call it democracy. But here's where the conceit of every time happens. We think this is the omega. This is the end of it. There's no more further evolution in our political discourse on this planet. But I have seen in the next 1,000 years, through prophecy, that we are going to make at least 5 major leaps beyond democracy that we can't even imagine yet. Just like Nostradamus couldn't imagine a life without kings. Democracy is a passing phase. It will be replaced someday by a system that's more like meritocracy, where right now those who can vote in who rules. In the future, yeah. People who know will vote in those who rule. And then there's another stage coming that's even more alien to our views now, but will be a blessing to the future, is those who are enlightened and know themselves will be those who rule. And then finally, there's a system where Bukharin and all those people were thinking about that once wonderful word called anarchy, which has been completely abducted by other people, just like Nirvana and Avatar and other great words have been abducted by popular culture and taken way out of context. The future, ultimately, in the next 700 years, is a world where people can govern themselves and need no government. And that it'll probably take 700 years. But democracy is not the end. Humanity moves on. Indeed, Nostradamus talks about humanity moving from beyond this earth itself. And that's why it's so silly for me when I hear people trying to twist poor old dead Nostradamus into saying that 2012 is the end times, because Nostradamus, without any obscurity, wrote it loud and clear that the world ends in the year 3797. That's almost 1,800 years from now, according to him. So I don't get it when I see documentaries like The Lost Book of Nostradamus, and at the end there was some woman purporting to be an expert on Nostradamus who literally changed the numbers of that prophecy to fit the opinion, which I'm hunting for her, and I'm gunning for her skull as a debater. I would love to challenge how she managed to twist 3797 and turn it into 2012. And make people think that Nostradamus had anything to do with 2012.
Well done. John, how about potential calamities of war? Do you see any of that ahead?
Well, in the book Predictions for 2010, I look at the something that you and I talked about. You know, that came out on November 1st, but you and I on the 2nd of September of last year, I said on your show, and I printed it out in the book that that was the beginning of the debate that the Obama administration was going to have about Afghanistan. And you asked me, well, what do you think in the end is going to happen? And my oracle said basically he was going to do a compromise that the Pentagon wouldn't like, basically a deadline that was not 5 years but 18 months.
18 months. Yeah.
And that he would send 40,000 troops into Afghanistan. Now people are saying, well, no, he didn't send 40,000 troops. You count NATO added, you know, it's almost 40,000 now if you count with the NATO.
30 from us, 10 from them, maybe.
Yeah. One can bandy the semantics of it, but it's 40,000 new people coming in there, and there's an 18-month turnaround. And then I said on your show that I felt that in 3 years' time we would be out of Afghanistan. And now that seems to be the timetable. And when he finally gave his report after Thanksgiving, my jaw dropped. I said, wow, how did we get that? You know, because that's exactly what he was thinking about. And I have no connection to the Obama administration. And they weren't even... they hadn't even figured it out yet, but that seems to be what their plan is. And I see, and I talk about it in the book, that we're going to see things calm down in Iran as well.
Interesting. Well, we need that too, John. John, we're going to take phone calls when we come back on Coast to Coast. Bullish for maybe not 2010. What about 11?
Oh, well, I really don't know.
See, I've got you writing your second ebook already for 2011.
Oh, I'll say this about 2011. We get into Uranus being in Aries for about 8 years. You're going to really get a roller coaster ride going forward into the surprises of the Aquarian Age.
All right, we'll talk a little bit about that and take phone calls next with John Hoag on Coast to Coast AM.